Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, Chris Evans here to thank you for listening to my podcast.
This week on the podcast, Harry Redknapp appeared to tell us why he can't keep off our TV screens. Lena Headey gave us the inside track on the end of Game of Thrones. The extremely affable and newly sober, 100 days and counting, comedian Richard Herring tells us about taking his podcast on the road, plus loads more from the likes of our old mate, broadcasting behemoth Danny Baker, singing star Louise Redknapp, and acting powerhouse Toby Jones. All of that and more on the way. Enjoy, my friends, enjoy.
Oh, we do like to be beside the seaside, and so does our next guest, Bognor Regis, to be precise. It's a man who's not only co-written the brand new BBC Two comedy Don't Forget the Driver, but also stars in it twice. Please welcome the wonderful Toby Jones.
Morning, Toby.
Good morning, Chris.
How are you, pal?
Very good.
Okay, so I was watching your show last night with a very cheeky Sunday night glass of wine, not a big one, but a very cheeky one, because I was still sort of on holiday in my head, because I was on the South Coast. Now, I had further to drive this morning, so when I've got not as far to drive, I don't have a glass of wine the night before, so to have one last night was a bit mad, but my family is still on holiday, and I enjoyed your show with a glass of wine. What did you have to drink last night?
I had a single bottle of beer, Chris, as I watched The Line of Duty.
It's a funny one, isn't it? The single Sunday night drink.
It's a bit sad, isn't it? Well, in the old days, you wouldn't have counted.
I know, but isn't it funny that we bothered to have one? Well, tell me about the thought process, because I really went through the machinations of should I or shouldn't I last night.
Well, there was a bottle of wine that could have been opened, and it's a weird, this is a weird calculation. It's not worth a whole bottle of wine. I'm not going to open a bottle of wine, because I probably won't, it's too boring to go into, but basically the beer seemed like a short, cold hit.
When I was having my glass of wine last night, I actually was thinking about you and where you were and whether or not you'd be having a drink, because I felt guilty. I thought, if he's not having a drink because he wants to be sparkly and gorgeous on the show tomorrow, then it's terrible that I'm hosting the show.
you seem your usual, sparkly self.
Irrepressible. Effervescent self.
I don't notice any difference at all.
I wouldn't have gone for the beer at 9. 8's too late. I'd definitely have to get up 2 or 3 times.
It was a bit gassy for that.
That's the other thing, it's too gassy.
Yeah. That's why I really would have preferred a glass of wine. But I thought, I'm not going to open a bottle of wine. These are the things, Chris.
My mate, who's the hairdresser, Morning Carmel, she only buys wine she hates, so she drinks less of it.
Is that right?
It's true.
That's good.
I said, she gave me a glass of wine. I said, this is terrible. She said, I know. I buy it on purpose. I mean, she's not short of a few bob, but she just buys really cheap horrible wine, so she doesn't drink as much. Anyway, your new show, it's not been on telly yet, but I've seen it.
Yes.
And you've seen it because you wrote it and you're in it.
Yes, I've seen two of them. I haven't seen all of them because I don't particularly enjoy watching myself. I have seen the first two episodes.
Okay, Don't Forget the Driver, it's called. I don't know how you describe it. I wish you didn't have to describe it as anything. Just watch it. It's a beautiful half-hour of telly. I didn't know when I was watching it, what it was about, because I'd never want to know what things are about, and I didn't know it was only half an hour, which did help my Sunday night preparation, so thank you for that. I thought I was in for an hour, and then it ended. I thought, oh, no. Oh, yeah. Yes. Like, oh, no, it's ended. Oh, yeah, I can go to bed. That kind of thing. So why don't you explain to people what it's about and where it came from? Where does this show come from?
So I co-wrote this with a guy called Tim Crouch, who's a rather brilliant playwright, and we both were interested in working together. He's from Bognor Regis, and he wanted to celebrate his childhood there, and his father still lives there. And he said, the thing is that I'm obsessed with Bognor Regis. He said, my brother lives in Gothenburg, but there's a webcam that looks down on Bognor Beach, and my brother occasionally logs on to the webcam looking at Bognor Beach. I said, well, what does he want to see? He said, well, I occasionally go down there and wave at him. I went, all right, and that's the beginning of a show. Okay. And he said, the other thing is coach drivers who just stand by their coaches and don't really engage with the thing their passengers are going to see. Right. He says, I like that sort of vibe. And he said, did you want to write this with me? And I went, yeah, definitely, yeah. And we went to Bognor. He took me on a tour of Bognor. And Bognor's a, kind of, all seaside is melancholy, I suppose. But I suppose Bognor, what was great is that he had some inside knowledge there. And we decided to sort of celebrate Bognor And then he said, well, maybe you should play a coach driver, and gradually the show emerged from that, really. And it felt like a good format because, in fact, weirdly, it felt like a format you couldn't believe hadn't been done before, which is that you got different groups of people going to a different place each week. So you get a different group of people with their different attitudes going to a different part of the UK every week, or in the first episode, Belgium.
Dunkirk.
Yeah.
Dunkirk. Did you have to do your PSV to film the show? Please tell me you can drive a coach now.
Well, it's funny. It's just come into my mind that my coaching instructor said to me, Chris Evans came and trained here in northwest London.
Yeah, yeah, Acton.
Yeah. So I went out there to do that, and failed it once, then failed it again, and then was thinking about failing it a third time, but we had to carry on shooting.
It takes forever, doesn't it? So do you have your PSV licence? Can you drive a coach now?
I can drive a coach, but I don't have the licence.
That's like saying I can perform brain surgery, but the patient might die.
I know how to drive the coach. You just say, failed me twice on going too slow the first time and too fast the second time.
Well, you gutted.
Yes, really angry.
Of course you were.
Really
of course you were angry about it
because I didn't know what to do with the failure.
Oh,
you know,
really?
You finish it cool because I don't have any reason to drive a coach. And so they said, well, you've got to take it again. I went, but have I? I should. I want to pass it. But at the same time, I thought, well, there's no point. I've done the show.
I love driving a coach. Anybody can go and drive a coach for a day. Of course you can. You can learn to drive a coach for a day. You don't have to go on to the next day. You just have a go for a day because you're up and driving within an hour of going to the test centre or to the place where they teach you. Acton for us, for Toby and myself, we learnt at the same place. And you're currently filming, you're chasing the snow, you told me. Why are you chasing the snow, Toby Jones?
Because we're doing a Christmas film called A Boy Called Christmas by Matt Haig, based on the children's book. And it's Jim Broadbent, myself, Sally Hawkins and Maggie Smith.
What a lovely company to keep,
yeah, really,
isn't it?
Really.
Well, you're brilliant. Thank you so much. What did you have to drink on Saturday night, by the way?
Well, Saturday night was a whole different kettle of
fish. Yeah, of course it is.
So I had a couple of cocktails on Saturday night. Yeah.
Look, tell us about the Jones cocktail palette.
French 75, Chris,
if
we're being specific.
Of course. But it's champagne in there.
Yeah, a bit of champagne 75. In there. Yeah. Marley, you even had a martini straight after.
Really? How'd you take your martini?
Dry.
Do you really? Interesting. What time did that all that finish? You don't have to tell me. Just tell me to shut up. It's just, I'm not answering these questions.
How did that it's all not finish?
It's not what I came on for. Just say that.
It finished with dessert, I think.
Did it?
Yeah.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky Virgin Radio.
Okay, we've got a guest on the phone now. He may well have hung up, and I don't blame him if he has. Who might be on the phone, Dave?
Looking for an epic tale? You can keep your Lord of the Rings. Lawrence of Arabia? No thanks. Just watch our next guest trying to pay for parking with a mobile phone. The new series, Hard to Please OAPs, starts tomorrow night on ITV. So it's time to welcome the king of the technophobes. It's Harry Redknapp.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Harry, how are you today?
Not too bad, guys. How are you?
Very well. Now, listen, I watched your show last night. It's very funny. It's called Hard to Please OAPs.
Yeah.
And basically, you're let loose. There's you, there's June Brown, there's Jack Whitehall's dad, there's Sheila Ferguson from The 3 Degrees and others, and Amanda Barry's there as well. And basically, you're just sort of thrust in the middle of modern life, and you're filmed. You're in Windsor. You're about a mile from our house. You should have said it. You could have come around for a cup of tea.
I popped in with a cup of tea.
You would have done. And so what kind of challenges are we talking about? John Sargent's there. He tries to get to grips with, what's your vacuum cleaner called, Vassos?
Oh, Sylvia.
He tries to, he's delivered a Sylvia in a box, and he's A, got to figure out what it is, then B, try and put it together, then C, try and get her to work, which he really can't do. So what did you have to do, Harry, first off?
Well, there's all types of things, you know, put a lawnmower together that would work automatically just on its own.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a bit of a disaster with that. Anything I tried, Chris, I made a mess of, really. I mean, I'm so useless, it's scary. You just cannot believe it. I mean, I'm just about worked the telephone, but other than that, I can't work. I don't have a computer. I'm just... I don't have a laptop. Honestly, I don't have an iPad. I'm so in the old world. It's scary, mate.
Okay, so you attempted to pay for this parking via the phone app. Now, we had to do this three times over the weekend. My wife is a genius at this, but you have to register all the different number plates of your car, or your wife's car, or your mum's car, or your dad's car, or your kid's car, and then you have to put in your blimmin' credit card number for the first time, which takes forever, and if you get one digit wrong, then you've got to start the whole process again. I don't know why they're doing it like this. I suppose it's in the opening scenes to your show, it does say, doesn't it? It does specify that it's predicted by 2046 there won't be any cash in the world anymore. So I suppose that's
No, I won't be worried about that one, Chris. For sure.
Oh no, I didn't mean it like that, Harry. I didn't mean...
Listen, if you ain't got, you know, if you go to a car park and you ain't got a machine where you can put £2 in or whatever, I'm out of there. If it's anything that's a bit technical, I've got a problem.
So you've been doing the show. You did the jungle. You're going on your talking tour, and yeah. And you did the thing with the ex footballers a couple of weeks ago. I mean, this is a real second lease of life for you, isn't it?
It has been. Yeah, it's kept me busy though, Chris. I mean, as a mate of mine said, I said, listen, I think I'm overdoing it. But he said, Harry, what would you be doing really? He said, now. 70-odd years of age, would you want to be sitting in front of the TV all day, just, you know? I said, no, it's kept me busy. It certainly has given me a new lease of life, Chris. So if I'm not playing golf now or going to football, you know, I've had other things to do, and it's been good fun.
Now, Jack Whitehall's dad, how'd you get on with him?
Good. Yeah, funny guy.
He's very, very funny, isn't he? He's hilarious.
See where Jack gets it from. Jack's. I love Jack as well. So it was good working with him.
So Ruth Maddox in this. Did you all get together? Did you have a big pub lunch and talk about it? Lionel Blair, 90 Lionel Blairs in it. Blimey.
I know. Ruth Maddox. I mean, she went on one of them segways, and I mean that was quite dangerous. Me and her on a golf course. She went flying. I nearly said something else, but she. She absolutely, yeah, it was hard keeping. She went down the hill and suddenly she disappeared into the bushes. But, no, it was good. It was good fun. They were all nice people. So I think anything like that you do, if the people are nice, it makes it easy for me. So it was good.
Also, what I love about it is because of the context, because of your perspective on things, you know, as you get older, I mean, you know, I'm 53, yeah. You know, and even at 53, you just start to relax about things more. And you, with you guys trying out all this stuff, it makes it look more nonsensical than it probably already is. It's like, why are we doing all this stuff? What is this all about? What's wrong with a normal vacuum cleaner? What's wrong with a brush and pan? Do you know what I mean?
That's how I am, Chris. Yeah, I'm not, you know, for me now to change, and it's not going to happen. I'm just really, you know, as I say, I'm pretty, you know, even telephones, even working any kind of gadget, I find difficult. I'm really not a practical
person. It's not that you
person,
find it difficult, is it? You just can't be bothered. Because I'm the same. I mean, I'm
can't
sure.
Be bothered, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure
my
we could do it.
My mind switches off. It don't interest me. I'm just. It goes over my head, and I'm not interested.
All right, will you do another series? What's the scoop on what's going on?
No, I don't know, really. Let's see how this one comes out, I suppose. I'm looking forward to seeing it, but I haven't even seen the clip, so it'll be brand new to me when I watch it, so it'll be interesting, yeah.
Well, you know what the second series is going to be? Hard to Please OAPs North America. They'll get you on a plane, just like of course they will. That's what they've done with Jamie, you know, your son and League of Their Own. They'll just put you on a road trip, and it'll be like the real Marigold Hotel meets That's Life.
That's it. That'll do. A couple of weeks in America or somewhere. I'll have that.
All right,
I'm ready. If the producer wants it, I'm up for it.
All right, Harry Redknapp. Thank you very much, Harry, for being on the show. We'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks' time about something else, I'm sure.
Chris, good to talk to you. Tell her, mate. Bye.
All right, pal. Cheers.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky. The best entertainment all in one place on Virgin Radio.
Do you fill your days off with junk food experiences or superfood experiences? Well, our next guest has 7 rules that he believes will make your free time richer, happier, and more nutritious. Please welcome the author of Time and How to Spend It. It's the incredibly fulfilled Mr. James Wallman.
Good morning, James.
Good morning.
Welcome back after all these years.
Thank you for having me,
Suffocation,
Chris.
Rock and roll.
Thanks.
100,000 copies and still selling.
And still selling, absolutely. And not just to my mum. To other people as well, I'm happy to say.
Members of your family. So, big decision. You have a big hit. It's like a band, second album syndrome. What do you do for your next book? You've written 2 books, haven't you, Vass?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not dissimilar for you. How do you decide what to focus your second book thoughts on, and how happy are you with it? How long did it take? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
That's such a good question. Thank you. The guys at Penguin would come to me every now and again, take me for lunch, say, come on, James, what's next? You know, we've done Stuffocation. What's the next big trend?
Yes.
You know, we're moving from stuff to experiences. And I would sort of sit there and say, well, I can't say there's another big trend. That would smell like bad fish, because I think this is a really big thing. This move from material goods to experiences is like a major trend that will happen out, you know, take place over decades. And one of the things that would come to me, I'd give talks and stuff, is people would say to me, okay, great, so Stuffocation said, don't spend on stuff, spend on experiences, but what kind of experiences? I didn't know. I didn't know the answer. I mean, I had an opinion, I got a view, but I didn't know the answer. So what I did was I started to sort of dig around. I started to talk to psychologists and economists and historians.
Proper people who know big stuff.
People cleverer than me.
Isn't that
the key in life, right? Find people smarter than you.
Surround yourself with...
Steal their ideas. That's exactly what I've done here. So I talk to people much smarter than me.
But there are some lovely ideas. I mean, in every chapter, I said to James before he came on the air, we could do an interview on each chapter of this book once a month, which we could do. So we could just talk about the first chapter this month.
I'm available, just so you know.
No, well, so am I. It's 6:33 or 10. Vasa's here too, aren't you?
I am.
Let's talk about the opposite of loneliness, because if loneliness exists, everything should have an opposite action or reaction or entity to it. So therefore, if loneliness exists, what is the opposite of loneliness? Now, a student wrote an essay on this, so tell us her story.
I always get a bit emotional thinking about this. I've been in touch with her mother, a girl called Marina Keegan, and she was graduating a few years ago from Yale in the US, and they published a special edition of the paper. And she wrote about how what she'd found at Yale with all her friends, and, you know, they'd stayed up till 4 a.m. And she, I can't really quote it because she's a much better writer than me.
I suppose what she was saying is that uni life, like working on a show like this or being in a band, when they're at the zenith, is you are just so not lonely. It's not funny.
Yeah, when you're going through an intense experience with some people and you go through something and you feel, that's one of the things she said, you feel like people are on your team. You know, when you go through something and it's tough and it's hard and sometimes somebody supports you and they're there for you. And that, you know, that moment at the end of the best bit of the party when there's four of you still up and you have that conversation that you know, and the rest of the party you forget, it's that bit that counts the most. She wrote about that and said that what she'd found and what she wanted in life was the opposite of loneliness. And then about a few days later, she was she graduated, her parents came and they took pictures.
And she was so excited about her life, wasn't she?
She was. And she wrote about how we're so young and it's so crazy to think that we can do anything.
We've got so much time.
And then 5 days later, she was driving home for her father's birthday, and her boyfriend, who wasn't drunk, wasn't over the limit, but he clipped the barrier, and she had put her seat back. He survived. The car flipped over a couple of times, but she died in the crash.
She was having a sleep, wasn't she? It was a long drive, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Her mother went through the wreckage and found her laptop, and took out the hard drive and has turned that into a book called The Opposite of Loneliness. But the essay was put onto the Yale University website that day, and it, you know, news travelled fast because, you know, the poignancy of just this amazing character with... she was fierce. You know, she was one of these...
She's funny.
She was noisy. You know, she had bangles when she walked into a room. She was talented, and I think she was a character. She was in some sailing race one time, and everybody came in because the wind was too dangerous, and she carried on and completed the race. You know, she was really determined, and she was set for success. And you know, sadly, her life was taken really early, and I think people related to it because they felt this, you know, sadness towards what had happened to her, but also this idea of the opposite of loneliness. Because what's super interesting, this is where the science comes in, is it's not the opposite of loneliness isn't just what we want, it's actually what we need in life. Because if you look at there's this incredible piece of data put together by a woman in Utah that discovered that if you are lonely, you are 29% more likely to die. When they do mortality research, it's one of the easiest pieces of research you can ever conduct, because what you do is you go and see somebody and then you come back and see them a few years later and it's either a tick or a cross. And what they discovered is that people who are lonely are 29% more likely to not be alive anymore. And you put that together with one of the longest studies ever conducted at Harvard since 1939, an 80-year study, and they looked at the people who are healthier, happier, and live longer. And the people who are healthier and happier and live longer, it doesn't matter how much you smoke, doesn't matter how much you exercise, doesn't matter so much what you eat. The most important thing, the clearest indicator of a long, happy, healthy life is friends, it's relationships, it's the opposite of loneliness. And when you hear that stuff... You know, we all know friends matter. We all know our family matters. But when you know that, you know, when you've got the science in front of you and there you are and you haven't been in touch with your old friend for a while, you pick up the phone and you go see somebody. You make that effort and it's worth doing.
It's funny, isn't it? Because one of the things, the main thing that can stand between you and any relationship is when
you have an issue with that other person or those other people. And that's why they say the meaning of life is forgiveness. Because if you can always forgive, you always have these people around you and you never push them away or push yourself away from them. And often, you know, they do say, don't they, the victims of lack of forgiveness isn't the person who is due to be forgiven, it's the one who refuses to forgive.
It's such a good point, because the thing about forgiveness is, you know, it's part of, you know, it's like love and gratitude. These aren't kind of stocks, they're flows. It's not something you just have and you kind of hand over. It's something that comes through you. But the forgiveness thing is super important. If you think about that first chapter about story and the hero's journey, we all need the tests, the allies and the enemies to discover who we are.
Yeah, and actually,
when somebody's really annoying, and I had a bit of a Barney with the wife over who was using the bathroom first this morning, and we had to do some forgiveness, and she had to forgive me. If she's listening, please forgive me, darling. And I did make it here on time, so
Tales
it was all okay.
Tales from ZW3. Yeah,
exactly. And, you know, we need those people to discover who we are.
Yeah,
and if we can realise that actually relationships are super important, and we go through the process of saying, not just forgiving somebody, but actually thanking them for giving us the opportunity to kind of like be a better person. I know that sounds kind of a bit woo-woo, but it's good for us, and it's good for being a hero.
Your patience and your consideration can only be improved if it's tested.
Yeah,
because you wouldn't choose to go and you don't go out trying to improve your patience and your tolerance on a daily. Why would you do? Well, how would you do that unless it was tested? You know, there's so much talk. You need to come back because I want to talk about this, the rise of the Sufferfest and everything else that's in your amazing book, because it's gorgeous. You're a genius.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky Virgin Radio.
Whether you're vegan, veggie, flexi, or simply fancy trying something different, the boys behind number one Sunday Times bestseller Bosch are back and making us think twice about our next meaty mouthful. Here to get to the root of Bish Bash Bosch, it's plant pioneers Henry Firth and Ian Theasby.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
And thank you for sitting in order, because that makes my life a lot easier, because you look very similar.
So much, yeah. Everyone confuses us. Basically, I answer to both Henry and Ian, as so does he.
Likewise.
Okay. And did you agree? Was the beard thing, was that a conversation? Was that a deal?
Yeah,
was that
an agreement? We go to the same grooming salon. That's we basically do everything together.
How did you meet, you two?
We met when we were 11 years old at High Store School in Sheffield.
Right, and when did the beards happen? Who grew the beard successfully first?
Good question. I reckon you did.
I think it was me. I was quite an early bloomer. I was about 14 and a half years old.
Was it a beard race?
You had a beard at 14?
Yeah, well, it was
I'm not
sort
sure
of like
about
the
that.
Beginnings of what.
Yeah. All right, good. So you work together now. Bosch was a massive bestseller. Bish Bash Bosch had to happen by popular demand. First of all, tell us about the benefits of a vegan diet, because I do know, but tell people that may not know, because now lots of athletes swear by vegan diets. They have more energy rather than less energy. The big myth that, you know, you get your iron from meat. Yeah, but most meat eaters, most meat producers are in fact herbivores, and so they must get their iron from, oh, guess what, plants. Right, over to you two.
I mean, look, there's so many athletes that are going plant-based, and like Lewis Hamilton, David Hay,
Chris Smalling.
Loads of really inspiring people that are doing it, and they're saying that they're finding recovery is a load better. Mm-hmm. It's maybe a little bit lighter on the digestive system. But also, yeah, you don't need protein. You do need protein. You don't need meat for protein. You can get plenty from plants.
And from like the perspective of the regular person, like for us, when we went vegan first and foremost.
Are you both vegan then?
Yeah,
it's official.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
So like hair got thicker, skin got clearer, energy levels went up, started sleeping sounder, waking up fresher. There was a whole raft of fantastic health benefits that came from it.
Hair got thicker.
Yep. Yeah.
All right, that's it. I'm done.
Yeah.
When do I sign?
And you've got a marathon to run, right? So
yeah.
You want to fuel up on this. I mean, it is basically a salad. Look, it may look like croissants, but it's made from plants. So,
another great sell.
Yeah.
So your hair's going to get thicker and you can eat things that look like things you're not
exactly.
eating.
Really easy.
Bosch was the first book. Bish Bash Bosch is the second book.
Yeah.
Bit of an issue with the third title.
I know. Got any ideas?
No, but we can come up with some. 87222. Come up with the title of the Bosch Boys'
the next
third book.
You've gone early on the Bish.
I know.
It's true, actually.
Yeah. We should have saved it. We should have saved it for the next book.
Really, just in Bosch Bosch.
Yeah. We had to call this book Bish Bash Bosch.
Why?
Because it's just we couldn't call it anything else, and someone else might have, you know, jumped us.
Yeah, someone else.
Well, if you've got Bosch and Bash Bosch out, someone else is going to publish Bish Bash Bosch.
Yeah. Maybe.
How very dare they?
Not these days. They're all seduced by their screens. Yeah. They'll come up with anything original or even sort of perfunctory. So Bosch 2.
I mean, it lends itself to loads of things, doesn't
Bosch,
it?
Like, yeah.
Bosch, Bosch,
Bosch,
Bosch, Bosch, Bosch, Bombay,
Bosch,
Baby Bosch. We could do a baby cookbook.
What about Bish Bash Posh?
Bish Bash Posh could be good.
Aye. About that?
Yeah,
or like a nonsense
truffle
book.
Oils and
Posh Bish Bash Tosh.
Yeah.
No, don't do that.
Boshier, Bashier.
Bosh Nosh.
Bosh
Nosh. Oh, Bosh. Yeah. So we shouldn't be saying any of these as looking at your face.
Get your pen out.
These are really good. Please stop saying them out loud on the radio. These boys are fantastic. Bish Bash Bosh by Henry Firth and Ian Theasby is out now. 140 recipes, all excellent for you. It all looks gorgeous. And often we eat with our eyes. And if it looks good on the plate, it usually tastes good in the tummy, hopefully for all the right reasons. You're coming to Carfest, aren't you?
We're going to be there on Friday. We're going to cook some food, meet people. It's going to be fun.
Now, the only... Sorry, word to the wise here. The only problem you have is if you come on Friday, right? If you're booked for one day for Carfest and it's Sunday, that's fine, right? Mm-hmm. But if you come on Friday... You will be there till Monday.
We'll stay.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, you will. I'm sorry. So you might as well.
We'll keep the weekend free.
Cancel your diary. But lovely to meet you properly, boys.
Thank you, Chris. Nice one, bro.
Bish, bash, bosh, boom. There's another one. No. What about bish, bash, bada, bada, bing? Yeah, stop it now. Okay, right, we'll shut up. Thank you. You're both brilliant. Thank you, boys.
Thank you.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky Virgin Radio.
He records himself looking for stones, potting snooker balls and talking to the odd celebrity or two. Now you can watch him recording live in your town on the Leicester Square Theatre podcast tour. Please welcome the cunning conversationalist, Richard Herring.
Morning, Richard.
Hello, how are you doing?
Happy anniversary.
Thank you.
Do you want to tell everyone?
Well, it's 100 days since I've had a drink today.
Okay, so last drink was on...
New Year's Eve.
Are we 100 days from New Year's Eve?
Yeah, we are. Well, today, yeah. So I get through today. I've done 99 days. I could crack.
Nah, you're pretty confident, aren't you?
I think it should be all right.
So where was it? What was it?
What was the last drink? I think I had champagne on just probably
champagne!
Midnight. Yeah.
And was it pre-midnight? I think
it was just... I think I might have gone to bed before midnight. We've got two young kids.
Most people do.
I might have taken the advantage of going to bed. I think it might have been about 10:30 we celebrated
New Year's. So we're talking podcasts. We're talking a Leicester Square Theatre experience, but also one that's going on the road. So there's a little bit of confusion there, so let's sort it out for people listening.
Yeah, well, we started calling it Rahulastapa, which is an acronym of it, which was... Is the thing that everyone checks. We do have this sort of crackerjack thing.
So you haven't had a drink for 100 years.
And so, because it's so it means something different everywhere we go now, RHLSTP. Right. It started at the Leicester Square Theatre. We've been doing it for about 7 years at the Leicester Square Theatre.
Really?
We've done 226 or something like that of these podcasts with people like Stephen Fry and Dawn French and people from America. Also, we had Richard E. Grant on the other day. So it's kind of getting interesting. Mainly comedians, but like in people who I think will be funny. So we're going to take it on the road and have hopefully people from your city coming in. We're doing Salford next month in May 25th, I think. And Sarah Millican's going to be one of the guests. I'm just revealing that for the first time. And a couple of guys from Emmerdale are doing the Leeds City Varieties on the 11th of May. So I'm going to be booking people who are local who I think will be funny, and then it's just an hour of kind of chat with each of them. And do two on a night, and it's a lot of fun. Because it's that long form thing, we don't get very much anymore, and because it's on the internet, you can say what you like, and it gives people a chance to properly open up. And sort of, it's funny, but then occasionally Stephen Fry kind of opened up about a suicide attempt he'd had. It was very moving and very inspirational, and it's a very relaxed atmosphere, so it's a nice podcast to do.
All right, Rich is on tour, and he's a lovely man. Richard Herring on tour. Rich Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast tour. It's a bit confusing, but just go with it. RichardHerring.com. Tickets on sale now. When does the tour start? What kind of places are you going to take in?
Well, it's sort of all over. I'm going to places I generally do quite well at already. So it sort of started. I did Birmingham last month, and that was fantastic.
Oh, so you've
fantastic.
Done it? You've done a bit?
Yeah, I've done it. So I'm in Leeds on May the 11th, I think, and Salford on the 25th. 5th of May. And
Wakefield,
then...
London, Warwick, Henley, Edinburgh, Henley. Yeah. Oh, Henley's a nice one. July, Sunday the 14th. Is that around the regatta time?
It's part of the festival. There's an actual festival.
Is it?
Yeah. So I'm interviewing Barry Cryer on that one, which will be fun.
Because he lives in the environment.
He does, yeah.
They all live, you could do a load of people. They all live around there, all the old school. Right, Rich, I suppose we're done.
Okay.
You don't have to pretend you like cricket.
I was just gearing up. I do like cricket.
Okay. Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast tour. Tickets on sale now. Dates already have been achieved and been triumphant. More will follow. Go to richardherring.com for all dates, all areas. And ticket prices and ticket availability. Happy?
Yeah.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky Virgin Radio.
Not content with selling 15 million records worldwide, our next guest is now conquering the West End. She's back in 9 to 5 the Musical at London Savoy Theatre and returns later this year with her first new album in 18 years. Please welcome the wonderful Louise Redknapp.
Good morning, Louise.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. You?
Yeah, fantastic. So 9 to 5 the Musical, how did you get in it? What do you do when you're in it?
How did I get in it? I got asked to do it after Cabaret. I played Sally Bowles in Cabaret last year, so they asked me to come and do this. I play Violet Newstead, who's like the office boss, and I love it. Yeah, I mean, it's different from music, obviously, and the kind of music, but I get to sing songs that Dolly's written, and yeah, it's a real feel-good show. It's like the best fun night out.
So would the journey be strictly the live show, so strictly Come Dancing on the Telly, strictly the live show, Cabaret and 9 to 5, would that be sort of the... Is that the arc we're talking about?
That's the arc with an album recorded in the middle.
Oh, it's not bad, is it?
And a song out at the minute. So, yeah, it's been it's been a crazy few months.
And how big is this role in 9 to 5 compared to the role you played in Cabaret?
They were both leading ladies.
So that's it then.
But I'd say I'm on stage more in 9 to 5. I'd say there's a lot more content, I think, because I shared, obviously, Cabaret. I was with Will Young, who... you know, played MC, so it's a big role. Where this show is really based about three girls, so we're not off stage pretty much.
Is it good fun?
Do you know, it's the best fun. It's a real feel good, like everybody comes, you can get a cup of ambition, which I don't know what's in it, but I'm really upset I've not tried one yet.
I might put that in my Amsterdam marathon book.
Cup of ambition.
Cup of ambition,
okay. Instead of energy gels.
What I needed in Manchester.
Cup of ambition when you're halfway around.
Interesting.
Cup of ambition.
What was hardest, or what is hardest, performing in 9 to 5 every night, or the rehearsals you had to undertake and get through to performing strictly once a week, physically?
Oh, God, that's a hard one. I mean, getting ready for the West End is tough, especially when you're coming in and everybody else in the cast has been doing it for 3 months and is so up to speed because you feel like you're going to let them down. But I think with Strictly, it's just the pressure of... you just don't want to muck up. You get one chance. Well, at least in the West End, if you muck up one night, you can try and put it right the next night.
You can fix it the next day, can't you? But, not that anything ever goes wrong, of
course. But Strictly, it's, you know, you muck up, you're out. So, yeah, it was nerve-wracking. But luckily, I went into it just with do my best, see what happens.
So the flip side of that is, though, you know, you're an amateur on Strictly, so in a way you can be forgiven for messing up.
Yes.
Whereas in 9 to 5, the Musical, people are expecting the real deal because you're top
of
the shop.
Absolutely. People paying to come and see you. And also, I think with 9 to 5, it's kind of more nerve-wracking because if you mess up, you mess everybody else's performance up. Yeah. You're all in it together. But it's been great. I've loved it. I realise... there's always a moment every night when we walk down at the end to the bows and the three girls, we all walk down holding hands together, and it's such an empowerful moment. And every night I do that, like, my heart swells with
souls,
pride because it's just such a special moment. Then it's the things like that you never forget in this industry.
Louise, lovely to talk to you again.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. So, Louise, new album out now. Give it a plug again.
Yeah, it was Heavy Love, Single Outstretch and 9 to 5.
9
all
to
good.
5 Musical, all good, and you're going on tour. And it's just great to have you around. That is Louise Redknapp, everyone. Thank you.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky. The best entertainment all in one place. On Virgin Radio.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Our next guest is king of the written word, king of the airwaves, and a recently anointed king of
steady on, steady on with the king of the airwaves thing.
King of the stage. Due to phenomenal public demand, he's announced more dates on his Good Time Charlie's Back tour. Please welcome the broadcasting behemoth and podcast king, Danny Baker.
Morning, Dan.
Exactly as I wrote it. Well delivered. Good morning to you, Chris Evans.
Right, so come on, off you go then. Back due to phenomenal public demand, more dates on this Good Time Charlie's Back tour. How phenomenal has the public
I tell you, this leg of it, as you know, 2 years ago, yeah. I never saw myself as a baggy pants song and dance man treading the boards, the first love of my the theatre. But in attempting to retire, and you know this is true, at 60 years old, to go to a beach, I thought I'd do one show after 42 years in showbiz saying, well, you know, from Tommy Cooper through to Sex Pistols, through Chris Evans and all of that, this is what it's like to be shot out of a cannon at 14 from school and end up doing this racket for 42 years. So I thought I'd do one of those. An evening with, sold out, boom. They said, do you want to do another one? I said, I'm not sure. They said, do you want to see the receipts from that? I said, all right, let's do another one. And that turned out to be 62 dates from Cumbria down to the Isle of Wight. The myth about me is, oh, he's to London. Not true. 62 dates. It was going to be an hour and a half crisp talking about my showbiz career. By the end of it, it was 3.5 hours and I hadn't left school yet because the story's about me dad and everything else, you know. And the public seemed to like it. And then, so the second phase of it, which is Good Time Charlie's Back, we did last year. But anyone who does what I do, anyone would tell you, what people say is, why didn't you come here? Why? What, don't you like us? Particularly Scotland. But planning tours, as I found out, look at me like an old veteran. Planning tours is like visiting relatives at Christmas. You can't pick and choose because they won't be in. Let's go there. We've never done Liverpool, for example. Extraordinary. Nottingham and Scotland. This time Aberdeen, Glasgow, Edinburgh. So this last tranche of it is so people won't stop me all the time and say, how come you don't come here? And it is a hell's a popping night out, as you can probably imagine.
So 3.5 hours and counting. Yeah, you're somewhere between Bruce Springsteen and Ken Dodd.
It is somewhere like it's like the Grateful Dead for the older listeners. By the way, where we are now, of course, is where I grew up. A lot of the stories I tell are where this very building stands.
Really?
And it is extraordinary to walk around here and think, man alive, I mean, I was shot. I was shot, Chris, not a quarter of a mile from here. Cabs would not bring you here. You probably don't. You'd stand in London's Oxford Street in London's busy West End, put your hand out for a black cab. You say, Bermondsey, mate. Vroom, they wouldn't even answer you.
Why particularly?
They just wouldn't come south of the river.
Right.
Nobody wanted to come. Not because it was so evil. It seemed like the end of the world.
Right.
Now it's the centre of the world. I was really shot. A quarter of a mile from here by some West Ham supporters.
Now, you nearly shot.
I was shot.
I thought you said shocked.
No, shot. I was shot twice. One of them in the rump.
You actually were
yes,
shot.
I promise you. Just
with a gun.
Where we are now, quarter of a mile from here in Tooley Street, just right. Across the road from here, in about 1975 or six, because all the pubs over here, because yes. It was all Dockers pubs, they used to stay open late when the licensing said you had to shut at 11. So these terrible old boozers, you know, absolutely depressed. And well, imagine Radio 2. That's what they were like. And we used to go, but they'd be empty. And then you'd walk about quarter to 11. All the young people would turn up because they'd carry on serving. I'd come out of there about 2 in the morning with about 11 of my friends walking down Tooley Street, quite a dark street. And a car went by and I was at the back and I heard that. And I looked down at my knee. Now, it wasn't a bullet, and it wasn't one of the things like you use at a fairground. It was those long, thin silver slugs that used to have a feather on the back. I don't know if you remember them.
I do remember them. Yeah.
Right into the knee. The feather was sticking out. I shouted out, I've been shot. I've been, a lot of blood from my knee. This car sped off down Jamaica Road here. And my mates thought it was the funniest thing in the world. Hi, Baker's been shot. It must have been West Ham supporters used to drive around here looking for trouble. I pulled it out and I'm bleeding. And this, I said, it's all right, I can't. What I didn't notice is there's a roundabout just by the Rotherhithe Tunnel here. And they'd turn round and now coming back up the other side of the road, everyone's gathered around me. I'm doubled over pulling this thing out of my knee. Mm. My rump is towards the road. It's a big target, Chris. And they got me again. It's absolutely true. I was shot twice just over there.
See, I've known you for years. You've never told me that
story
before.
True story.
Well, is that in the set?
That isn't even in the set.
Right.
That isn't even in the set. What is in a pub that used to be about a quarter of a mile from... You can't imagine where we are. It's an absolute glass cathedral, the most modern building in the world. About a quarter of a mile away, another pub called the Anti-Gallaghan. I left there at about 1 o'clock one night. They said, oh, you're taking a chance. Why? Davy the Dwarf. And I said, what? And they said... David the Dwarf. And I had no idea what they were talking about. And it's one of those tragic things. What are you talking about? I walked out of here and the arches under here used to be some of the most desolate places you can imagine. All the London Dungeon used to be here. Yeah. Absolutely deserted part of London. Coming towards me on the other side of the road was a figure about 8 feet tall in this arch. He had his hand against the top of it on the other side of the road. Swinging these huge legs. And there was this fella who was so traumatised by his height restriction. He used to walk around Bermondsey, where we are now, after dark, being a big person. But it overcompensated, and it was one of the most eerie things I've ever seen. And he walked by on the other side of the road, and my blood run cold. And I thought, this is the power of suggestion. They said David the Dwarf. Next morning, I said, I saw him. And I started running. And they said, he walks around Bermondsey after dark. And he was at least 8 feet tall. It was one of the most tragic and chilling things I've ever seen.
Now, Danny, I and all your pals and all your fans have been saying you could do this for years. And you've only been doing it for the last couple of years.
2 years.
Why call it a day? I mean,
I'm not calling it a day. Right. Yes, I am calling it a day.
Why aren't you?
I am trying to retire. I'm 60, and people say, "Oh, you couldn't retire." You watch me. I'm very good at flicking playing cards into a top hat and looking at my old.
Are you?
Yeah.
So I've always wanted to do that.
Oh, if only this were a Friday night TV show, we could sit here now and do that.
Yeah, imagine.
But I every time I try to, and I'm not being cutesy pie here. Like the tour was supposed to be one evening with, turned out to be 62 dates, now it turns out 120, now we're still doing this. There will be a third one.
Meanwhile, Wendy's retirement is getting further away, pal.
Drumming her fingers saying, oh, the old retirement gag, is that what it is? The other direct messages I had, yep. I promise I'm not doing this to say, oh, I'm hot and busy, I'd rather be doing playing cards into a top hat, was from Will McDonald, who was the producer on TFI Friday. Will gets in touch. Dan, I'm doing this game show for Channel 5. Would you be one of the captains? Will, I'm 61. What would captain on a game show?
I'm trying to retire.
I said, I've been around that rodeo. And he said, well, you know, it's good, but American company owns it and we've got a live bar and a live band on it. Where'd you get that idea from? So I said, I don't think so, Will. Wendy says to me, ooh, Laurence Olivier, when did you get $2,000 to go and work with your friend for 2 weeks? That's on Channel 5 at the minute on Friday nights, and the Lineker thing, and the tours, and yet if I walked out of here and got run over by a bus, it would be soap powder, Daz man dies.
Or refuses to die.
That's what it is, yeah. Chris, man who used to work with Chris Evans found in gutter. That, mind you, we're always a heartbeat away from that headline,
yeah,
aren't we?
Yeah, again. All right, OK, well, Danny, thanks so much.
No, always. Well done. You know,
good time, Charlie's back. Tour continues April 29.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Taking a seat on our own Iron Throne is a lady up there as the most evil in all of Game of Thrones, and that really is quite an achievement. But what will her fate be? Here to reveal all ahead of her the last ever season. Who am I kidding? She's not allowed to tell us anything. It's the really lovely and not evil at all, Lena Headey.
Morning, Lena.
Hello.
You can't actually tell us anything, can
you? I can't tell you.
Thank you very much, Lena Headey. Bye-bye. Great. Okay, someone else next. No, okay. Lena, welcome. So you've been Game of Thrones, what, for 9 years now?
Yes.
9 years. How did you get the job?
Just a simple audition.
Right. And why did they come to you? Is it actually, I know this. Wasn't it one of your pals who already had a job
on
the show?
Oh, yeah, it was Dinklage. I was doing a job with Dinklage. And he said, oh, my God, I'm reading the script and it's bonkers and you should do it. And I was like, incest, dragons, I'm in.
So did you? So you hadn't read the script then because you weren't allowed to. Did they send you anything beforehand, the audition?
No, okay. They just send you like a page and don't tell you anything else.
Right, what did you think of the page you were sent?
It was kind of saucy.
Was it? Yeah. So it was saucy first and everything else second.
Yeah.
Third, fourth and fifth.
Yeah.
Right, now have you been in that, because you've been in every series, have you been in every single episode?
No, not every single episode.
All right.
I've missed a few.
Okay. And you've seen people come and go. This is the last series. Is it all in the can? Is it all done and dusted? Everything is nailed now?
Yes.
There's nothing still to be done?
No.
So are you still in the employ of the producer of Game of Thrones, or is that...
No, I'm heavily unemployed now. Yeah. Okay. A bit scary.
Which is... Because you're mid-40s now?
Yes.
Yeah. Cool. Just come a bit closer to the mic if you don't mind.
Sorry, yeah.
Lena. And were you discovered at the age of 17?
Yeah, 17.
So you spotted in what, by whom, where?
I did a school play. I'm from Yorkshire, and we got a competition and we went down to perform on the National when we were young, and which was massive for like a little high school.
What was the production?
It was called The Coca-Cola Dragon.
Right.
It was about the Vietnam War.
Right.
And it was performed by a bunch of girls from Yorkshire.
Right.
And, yeah, I got spotted and asked to audition for it.
And were you into acting so from, like, 10 or 11, or was it later for you at school?
No, I loved it.
From
always.
The beginning?
Yeah.
Okay, inspired by whom or what, maybe?
I don't know. I just thought, oh, I'd love to do that. And everyone said, you can't. Doesn't happen to people. And I was like,
who did you like at the time?
I think I liked all the old musicals. Right. You know, I loved kind of watching all that shiny, like, otherworldly
stuff.
What
about Mum and Dad? Did they with the sing-alongs at home, with the evenings around the piano? Did you have a favourite uncle or auntie who brought the guitar around? Or
no?
So this is all down to you.
Down to me.
You're a self-made. Because often people come in and they talk about, oh, my uncle Phil, he came around, and it's all down to him.
I think it was just escapism.
And was it via the telly or the cinema or
telly?
Yeah?
Yeah.
Now, how much... I know you can't talk about about Series 8, sort of at all, right?
No.
Which is fine, and that's the way it is with Game of Thrones. But so how much can you talk about things that have happened in the last 7 series that we haven't thus far found out about, like the secret, the extent of how secret the scripts are, how soon you find out who's going to be killed? Because I'm new to Game of Thrones. I don't know if they've told you this, right? But I'm aghast, I'm amazed how quickly people get killed, i.e., you have an inkling about 3 seconds before their throat is slit or they've stabbed or something falls on them. I mean, it's pretty instant. So tell us your experience of secret scripts and things like that.
Well, I think that's true. When you watch it, if you fall in love with a character, they're going to die. It's like you sort of almost project it onto them.
Apart from you. Oh,
yeah. Well, no one likes Cersei, so she's still around.
See, I don't mind her, but we'll get into that in a minute or two.
It's very secretive. We have to sign, kind of, as the show's gone on, you have to sign lots of papers. Mm. And then the lovely runners come and they're like, can I have your paper? And if you don't have it, they get in trouble.
Right.
So we always kind of hang on, stuff it any way you can.
So but the higher you go up in the pecking order, and let's face it, this from an acting point of view, there's very few higher than you in the Game of Thrones world. Do you get let off? Do you get told a bit more, or is it the same rule
no,
for everyone?
Oh God, no, same rule.
Yeah,
that's what's lovely about it.
Right. Oh, let's talk about special effects. When it snowed in scenes you were in, mm-hmm. was it snowing?
It did actually snow.
Where?
When we were in in the sort of map room. They right. just suddenly opened the skies and it properly snowed.
What, with real snow from God?
Real snow, not real snow, like fake snow.
And oh, no, that's what I'm asking. So did you go to places where it really snowed as you were filming?
I didn't.
Course?
They right. did. Okay. I'm always in Belfast in a room.
This room in Belfast, how big is it? Is it a soundstage?
Yeah, it's where they built the Titanic. So our first season, there was no soundproofing. So right. there was just pigeons and wind and we had to redo the whole thing.
Right. Now, what about your friends and your family in Game of Thrones? I mean, it's not a three-line whip. They don't have to watch. They don't have to be fans. But how many are? How many aren't? Percentile-wise,
very few. Really love it.
Right. Do you like it?
I watch it.
Okay. So where will you be watching on Monday?
I will be with my children on holiday, so I won't be watching.
Okay. And how much of the final series have you seen?
I haven't seen any of it.
Do you know what happens in the end?
Yeah.
No, I know it's not just because you're in it, but don't they like record multiple endings and not even tell the actors? Does that happen?
No, we know.
All right. So what might happen?
What might happen?
So you actually know what... So, like, there are hundreds...
They're really scared now.
Maybe hundreds of millions of people in the world want to know what happens, and you know what happens.
Ooh, yeah.
What does that mean? Master, you're a brilliant commentator. Lena did with her hands.
That was quite a strange. It was almost in prayer position, but the fingers were wiggling, and then the hands from prayer position at sort of chin height went up to above forehead height and down with fingers wiggling all the time while staring at you without blinking. So what was that?
what did that mean, what you just did?
It was sort of an internal mwah, like I know.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky. The best entertainment all in one place on Virgin Radio.
Not content with being a lost boy, a young gun, a designated survivor, and of course, a Jack Bauer, our next guest has turned his attention to making beautiful music. With his new single, Something You Love, out now, and second album, Reckless and Me, out later this month, please welcome the legendary Kiefer Sutherland. Sutherland.
Morning, Kiefer.
Good morning. I don't know how you get past an introduction like that, but thank you very much.
He's very good, isn't he?
Very nice. I'll take you with me.
Yeah, he writes them, he reads them. He's the real deal. Well, Kiefer, congratulations. Forgive me, I had no idea you could do this so well.
It's a really well-kept secret, and that's very kind of you. Thank you.
No, but I was reading online last night because I watched some of the live performances because they filmed over the last few days and they've been posted on... You posted some on YouTube yourself. I think you might have done. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
I think the point is, I work with might have.
But they're there anyway. And the comments are so complimentary because you can really do this stuff. How come you've been hiding under a bushel for so long?
I think for the longest time I was... I'm uniquely aware of the stigma of an actor doing music, and I had no intention of making a record. I had about 25 songs that I wanted to record to send off to BMI and Sony Music and see if any of their artists would like to do them. And the producer that I was working with, a guy named Jude Cole, who's been one of my best friends for 30 years, really liked the songs, and he was the one who convinced me to kind of make them, keep them for myself. And one thing led to another, and I fell in love with touring, and so for the last 5 years... and played, 400 shows and in the middle of doing Designated Survivor. And it's just, it's been a fantastic new outlet for me to try and figure out how to tell a story this way.
So you start your first gig and you're back here and you're yearning to get to this place of presence and comfort, aren't you?
Yeah.
Where you can sort of go deep as opposed to long. Mm-hmm. So how long did it take you to get to that stage?
We were doing, it wasn't that long. It was maybe a month or two, but we were playing a show in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and I think it was the first time we weren't playing in a dirty bar, and the audience was actually seated, and it felt more like a theater, and so I felt comfortable kind of saying, this is where I was when I wrote this song, and this is why I wrote it, and this is why I think it might be worth listening to, and maybe you've had a similar experience. And once that dialogue started with the audience, the show completely changed, and here I was for the first time in my life telling kind of personal stories about my own life, something that I'd protected for 30 years.
Yeah.
And it was one of the most freeing experiences I'd ever had. And so once you kind of could lean into that, the shows became an incredible amount of fun.
One of the things after going to a great gig I don't like is getting stuck in traffic in the car park on the way out or having to get up for work the next day. And I just always want to go out and carry on the party. And I will consider that before I book tickets for a gig, like what happens afterwards, because I don't want to be, on a really massive high of a natural supply and then have to try and get to sleep at 10:45. What do you do after a gig?
Well, I go straight for a cigarette and a whiskey.
You know,
it's so good for the voice. And I was going to say, if you come to one of our shows, you just hop on the bus and we'll get you home.
And by the way, I don't mind when.
And we don't pull out for quite a while, okay. So you won't have any traffic by the time we leave.
That's fine. And so have you experienced any kind of continuous euphoria like that you're experiencing after gigs now?
I think there's the huge relief if something goes well, you know.
But that's different, though, isn't it?
And, well, no, it's kind of, it's all part and parcel because... and I've had this experience. I did that championship season on Broadway for a year. The 300th performance wasn't any easier walking on than the first one. So just for me, I have a natural kind of, I figured out how to use the nervous energy and kind of move forward with it. But yeah, I have great expectations of what I want out of a show. And to get through it and have kind of even get 75% of that accomplished, wahoo, and I love the band that I play with, and look, if we felt we earned the drink and a cigarette, we're going to take it.
Good for you. But what's interesting about when music is introduced into the live performance genre, as opposed to theatre or even musical theatre, when it's mostly music, like you're doing at the moment with your band, there's a different, that you have some sort of added help, don't you? Music is a wave you can ride on and in.
Completely different rules. You do a play in the theater as an actor, and they've got rules. And, you're supposed to sit quietly, you're supposed to listen, wait till the end of the performance. If you choose to show your appreciation, great. Music, we want you out of your seat from the first downbeat. We want you making as much noise as possible, and we want you part of it. So it's just a very different way of presenting stories.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky Virgin Radio.
Are you gut happy? Is your tummy yummy? An unhappy gut can lead to all sorts of health problems, and our next guest has news of a holistic health revamp that can flip reverse any nasty symptoms. Here to share her transformational story, it's journalist Claire Irvin.
Good morning, Claire.
Hello.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So I read your article. It was the cover article, cover story on the front page of the Telegraph magazine on Saturday, and I was reading it on the South Coast, and here you are now as a result of me reading that and reading every word and syllable out and comma and semicolon out to my wife of your article. She said, I've got to get on with my day, but it's so fascinating. So what issues did you have with your gut? What drove you to go all the way to where you went to find out everything you needed to know?
Well, I've had long-term discomfort when I eat. I mean, you know, from way probably 20 years of knowing that I perhaps shouldn't eat certain things, that they're going to make me feel uncomfortable, but not entirely knowing how to avoid that. Going to the doctors, being told I've got IBS, coming away and starting to eat healthily, so eating loads of fruit and then feeling even worse, feeling quite depressed, going back to eating, you know, so there's this vicious circle. And it just, I also have quite a good but very stressful job. I've got a commute, I've got kids, you know, so you, all these things are compacting, you know, drink too much coffee out of vending machines, all these things. And it got to a point where I literally felt like I couldn't stand up straight.
Right.
So although I probably looked like I was internally, you know, it was excruciating, really fed up.
Right.
And I was grumpy and I was edgy. And I mean, it was adding stress to a life that I didn't really feel needed it.
But fortunately, you are the travel editor for the Telegraph magazine.
And Very fortunately, in more ways than one.
You could do something about it. Now, I didn't realise you were the travel editor. I thought you were the health editor. But never the twain shall meet, apart from in the Telegraph magazine. So
absolutely.
You went to where, for how long, and who did you meet, and what did they teach you?
So I went to Lanzerhof in Austria. There's three of them now. This was the original Lanzerhof clinic. Mm-hmm. And it has created this energy cuisine, a Lanz cuisine system based on FX Meyer clinics. So for any of those who know anything about gut health, FX Meyer was the originator of this idea that the gut has its own brain and really worked out this method of cleansing and detoxifying the body and treating it. So Lanzerhof now has this really fantastic retreat in the Alps, and you go and they completely, it's diet, it's a very holistic approach to cleansing your gut and getting you back on track.
You said within the first 36 hours, the tummy you'd wished for the last 20 years finally appeared, or disappeared almost.
Yeah, disappeared, exactly, yeah. And, you know, one of my dinner buddies, this really lovely Swiss lady, just said to me, it is like looking at a different Claire. And she'd only known me for 24 hours. I was like, this is brilliant. I'm staying here.
when did you go? How long ago did you go?
It was in October.
Okay, and everything fine since?
Yeah. And I mean, you know, I remember the doctor said to me, well, you know, people come back and they say, well, I was okay until Christmas. I was okay until my birthday. But in actual fact, I think if you know the rule, it's fairly easy just to clear a week. Mm. I think I'm going to do it properly for a week. And then you can just... You know, you can just tweak it.
And once you feel the results and sense the increase in well-being, why wouldn't you carry on?
Exactly. So, I mean, they are really, really easy rules to live by. So, yes, it is hugely expensive to go to Lanzerhof. You know, one in five people suffers from IBS. One in five people aren't going to be able to afford to go there. But the rules and the takeout, you know, the hot water bottle on your tummy.
Oh, this is good. Tell everyone this is a great tip.
Yeah, so if you... Well, that's it, really. Sit with a hot water bottle. I mean, they have a special Lanzerhof way of sort of wrapping it around your stomach. But effectively...
In a damp cloth, isn't it? They
yes, put
it
if, in a you, damp if you wrap it in a damp cloth and then you hold it on your tummy for 20 minutes, again, that really helps soothe it. And that's amazing. So it's kind of little things. Hot and cold showers can help with your circulation and therefore your digestion. You know, the whole thing about hot and cold is really important. So, you know, there's so many takeouts that anybody, like you said, you've been following it since Saturday and feel better.
Yeah, well, we've been doing the cold shower thing on the show for the last 6 weeks, and now loads of people have been doing it. We don't need espressos anymore. We're on fire in the day.
Yeah.
We sleep better at night if you have a cold shower just before, hot and then cold, just before you go to bed at night. It just changes everything. I don't know what it is. There must be science behind it. You probably know a bit of it. But you lost on average a pound a day. You look great. You look fantastic. How much have you lost since October? How much weight have you lost?
I haven't, but then I'm not trying to. I'm just trying to stay comfortable. So,
okay.
You know,
right.
I probably lost in all maybe 15, 16 pounds because
you
when
say
I,
where you are.
Yeah, when I came back from Lanzarote, this is how committed I was. I went straight into a travel conference, and they are really boozy affairs, and they, you know, rich food the whole time, you're being mass catered to. And I stuck to it religiously, and then for another 2 weeks after that. So all in all, I lost about £16.
All right, the very successful article. You said you've been inundated with requests like this since Saturday.
Absolutely,
what do you do next about this? Because this has now turned into the first chapter, I think, of something else.
Well, there's a huge debate. Somebody's come out and said that IBS is in the mind, not in the not an actual physical thing, which is...
Right.
Yeah. So there's going to be a lot of debate on that.
I'm just wondering if that person has ever suffered from IBS. I'm taking a while, I guess, that they maybe haven't. So what are you going to do next?
So we're looking at other gut health clinics. We're looking at other ways that it's changed our readers' lives. We're going to be doing loads of first-person stories. And I'm quite looking forward to going and exploring some of those places as well.
All right, well, awesome. And if people want to read this article for the first time, where can they go to read
it? It's on the Telegraph website.
Under...
Gut Health, Claire Irvine.
All right, Claire. Thanks for bothering to come here.
Thanks for having me.
Anything to say, Vassos, before we lose Claire?
I love this.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky Virgin Radio.
Thank you so much for listening to this, the podcast of the Virgin Radio Breakfast Show. Don't forget you can subscribe and get it every week from wherever you get your podcast, and you will never miss the weekly roundup of all the best bits from our Virgin Radio Breakfast Show with Sky.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.